You're listening to the weekly Portland podcast. For a complete list of episodes, visit pdxpod.com or find us on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Remember to like, share, and subscribe.
Ryan Alexander Tanner is a cartoonist and educator living in Portland, Oregon. His comics work is largely focused on making complex ideas more accessible to a large audience. He's probably most well known for illustrating the company logo for Dave's Killer Bread, as well as co-authoring and illustrating Bill Ayer's book on progressive education to teach the journey in comics for Columbia University's Teachers College Press. You're listening to the Weekly Portland Podcast with Gregory Day. I'm Gregory Day. What a coincidence. I've started a book club. We meet the first Monday of each month. We're called Audiobook Club PDX. The first meeting is on the 8th floor of the Nines Hotel. It's an open forum discussion group, so feel free to blab on and on about any audiobook you've read that month. Okay, that's enough with my plugs. Now back to Ryan Alexander Tanner. Boy, he was a fun interview. Very tall man. He is very impressive in stature. Ryan has a new project to promote. We're going to hear more about that today. Now, we're also going to learn a little bit more about the story of how the Dave's Killer Bread logo came to be. You're listening to PDXPodcast.com with our special guest today, Ryan Alexander Tanner.
I'm not an introvert. That's been a struggle for me with the work that I do, that I'm not a person that wants to sit alone in a room and do work and not look at people and not talk directly to people.
That's great.
Yeah, so I was just thinking about myself as like I'm doing finger quotations, an artist. My work generally is not about me. It's about me as a filter, as things I've observed or something. Like, if I can learn about a subject, I can tell you what I've learned. But I don't really talk about myself and my work, and I sort of learned in that experience that I don't really want to do that.
Did you actually meet Dave Dahl before you designed the logo for...
Yeah, I've met him a bunch, and I see him not often. I probably hang out with him twice a year now. He's busy, and he's got a lot of kind of hangers-on, I would say. But yeah, I met him because I was doing comics journalism for the Willamette Week, and they sent me to the farmer's market to interview vendors. And so I met him then, and I had, I'd seen the bread with his photo. Then it was a photo, and it was kind of a weird novelty product, like Dave's Killer Bread, and there's a picture of Dave on it, you know, and his life story's on the bread. It was just like an odd, and then it was really good bread. I think a lot of people had that process of like, what is this weird product? And then, oh, it's actually very good. And so I met him just to interview him for the paper, and then I swear that this is true. It's like one of those things where you have a single moment that kind of changes the course of your life. And I remember I was like tired that day and I didn't really want to talk anymore, but I was like, no, I should go ask that guy if I can interview him about prison. So I went back over and I said, hey, you said you were in prison when we interviewed you, and could I interview you sometime about just what it's like to be in prison? And he was like, yeah. And then he was like, you're an illustrator? And I said, yeah. And he's like, okay, I might actually want to talk to you about something. We went through a million drafts of that logo, and he would...
Really?
Oh, yeah. It took forever to draw that thing. And he would, like, come over to my apartment once a week.
Make my biceps bigger.
Yeah. No, he definitely... Yes, actually, specifically. And just getting his face, too. Like, we had everything but the face done for a long time, and I... If you look at the original drawing, which I don't have anymore, but it has a different face on it, and then we just plugged in new faces. I probably drew 30 faces on it. And so he would come over to my apartment and, like, make the face in the mirror and then turn around real fast so I could take a picture, you know, and just over and over. But he had these great notes, you know, like, make it look cool and things like that. Weren't super specific, but he had a real... But he did have a vision for the thing, which was a cool part of it. And he really cared about it. I like to work with people who really care about what they're doing, you know?
I read Space Prisoner, and I immediately thought of Sam Rockwell's character in Moon.
Oh, yeah.
Have you heard that?
Well, again, I don't know if I got any feedback about that.
It's a wonderful comic.
Oh, thank you.
also.
Yeah, it was just an idea I had.
Can you give us a background of the synopsis of the story?
Yeah, it's about a guy, it's in the future, and it's framed by two psychologists on a space station or something in the future, and one of them is giving a case history for this new psychologist's first case, and it's this guy who's called the space prisoner, who was essentially, he was like a really bad soldier,
yeah.
And then he was basically a janitor on a ship that was transporting pharmaceuticals to soldiers, and the ship gets abandoned, and he's stuck on the station for, I don't know, I can't remember, a year or something, and he just gets addicted to the pills, basically. And then when they finally get him, he doesn't want to leave. He just wants to be on the ship by himself, and that he has full access to media, that he can watch all the movies he wants and watch YouTube or whatever. So he really just wants to get high and watch TV.
The Ian Carmel illustration for the Portland Mercury, was that based on a photo or just your illustration of him? It's him.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I think there was a specific photo. So I did an illustration of Sarah Merck when I was first getting to know her, I think just for fun. And then they were doing a redesign of the Mercury, and she's
after his personality.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I try to do that very much with portraiture. You know, I think that's an important thing to do. So Sarah Merck, they were doing a redesign of the paper, and Sarah Merck was like, "Oh, what if we just have illustrations for the author pages?" And they're like, "Well, do you have an example?" And she had a portrait I did of her, so they just plugged it in. And then it sort of, maybe even by accident, became, "Oh, we'll just hire this guy to do all the portraits." And I've had a little bit of trouble with, as they've continued to do those over the years, some of those people I've never met, and they'll just send me a photo. And then you're just drawing a photo of someone, and you don't know what you're saying about them, really. But Ian Carmel, I think I'd seen him perform a lot. Also, with facial hair and things like that, some people are just easier to draw than others, you know? You get a sense of who they are. For him, like I said, I've seen him perform a lot of times, and I've met him at least a few times, so it was kind of easy to just draw that. But there's been a few people that I've drawn their portrait. They just send me one or two photos of them, because I tried to go down there to the office and
I've been there.
Meet
gotta
them.
Got to get buzzed in.
Yeah.
The Portland Mercury office.
Yeah. They let me in, you know, I'm familiar to them. It's for a reason. So, but I've tried to go down there and take pictures of them myself and just kind of even talk with them, like, how would you want to be represented? Or even, I feel like if you talk to someone for 3 minutes in person, it's way easier to draw their portrait than if you get even 20 photos in your email of them and you've never met them.
Have you ever done Stephen Humphrey?
I did, yeah.
He
sat for me, I think, does he not do the I Love Television column anymore?
I know he did.
Yeah.
For a long, long time. Now he hosts shows for the Mercury.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I remember sitting with him and having that taking his picture and talking with him. And I'm almost positive. It's weird. I should
strong
know
personality.
That, sure, yeah. I like him as much as I know him and have spoken with him. He's been a cool guy.
And you are teaching youth.
Uh-huh.
Please tell us about that, because you touched on this at your Back Fence PDX talk. I'd like to learn more.
A friend of mine, Reed Saltis, was doing it, and then he left for grad school, and so he had me be his... He knew I had a lot of experience with teaching, and then I always feel bad because I think he might have wanted that job back, and I didn't pass it back to him when he came back to Portland. But there's kids. I don't know the exact conditions. They're not in juvenile hall. They're you know, detained. I think they go home on the weekends. So it's basically this it's like Boys Town, you know? And they live there, and they have treatment.
What age group are we talking?
They're teenagers. They're like high school
teenagers.
Age. I think they're maybe 13 to 18 or 17. And they live there, and they have school there, and then they have treatment hours, and someone decided that a good treatment program for them initially would be to do comics, which is what Reed was doing. And I came in to do the comics program, and I think I got about 3 weeks into it, and I just told the people I worked for, like, these kids do not want to do comics. I think if I can, you know, do lettering with them or different forms of illustration, they want to draw logos, things like that, that would work out well. But I really, in forming relationships with those young men, I felt like they needed to have say in what they were doing, and that they didn't seem interested in comics to me. So this is my third year now of just doing it purely as an illustration program. And it's a lot of it's about relationship building, like letting them know that if they're feeling depressed and they don't want to draw that week, that that's okay. Or sort of just empowering them to take on illustration as a, so almost like a meditative practice.
Depression is common?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all these guys are all upset. You know, they're having a bad time for whatever, for all sorts of reasons, you know. And so, I mean, I think it's probably the only drawing program I do where people will, like, crumple up paper and throw it on the ground and walk out. You know, they're upset. They're having a lot of feelings. And just sort of giving them space to do that if they want, and then sort of knowing that drawing can be sort of a meditative practice, you know. Because a lot of times I just bring them images. Like, oh, I want a picture of, I don't know, they like skateboard logos a lot. Or certain celebrities, things like that, or Sonic the Hedgehog, or they all want to draw Goku this period. And so, okay, let's sit down and draw this, and let's kind of measure it and try to feel those lines. And if you can just sort of focus and concentrate and try to sort of calm yourself to get into a state of shaping that image, I think it's therapeutic for them.
What are you learning from them?
From them? Well, I am learning to be more kind and patient and empathetic, which I think are great practices and exercises. And I think too, I think as an artist, like I went to art school, and to me a lot of the conflict was like how superfluous and how self-indulgent the practice of making art is. So I think in my career, both forms of my career as an illustrator, comics artist guy, and as a teacher, I've really tried to do work that isn't so selfish, I guess. I spend a lot of time exploring myself. I'm doing it right now, talking to you, you know, or we can go to the bar later and I'll tell you all about my life. But in the work I'm doing, I try to contribute something.
Collaborative
work, I mean, and everything is collaborative. Like, this work with these young men is collaborative, you know. But essentially, I know how to do, I'm only good at like one or two things in life, you know, but I know how to make images and I know how to communicate visually and that process. And so I'm trying to find ways to make that be a contribution in some way beyond just a self-indulgent.
It's very important to feel like you're contributing. It sounds like you're doing a lot more than teach them about comics.
Yeah, I mean, drawing, I think I'm barely teaching them about drawing. I think I'm more just being a person in the room that cares about how they're doing and what they're processing. I'm not allowed to talk with them a lot about what they've done that got them there and things right. like that, but I think just being a person that doesn't... I always say my job is to not get mad at them because they really give me a hard time. I think, too, if it is selfish at all, there is a part of me that... I was never incarcerated, and I didn't really commit a lot of crimes as a youth, but I had a really bad time being a teenager. I think... Teaching teenagers, for me, if I'm good at it at all, it's because I hated being that age. Like, that period of my life was, I would say, the hardest time. And so I think there's a sense of, like, repairing that period of I had with myself by helping other people have a better time at that stage
it's
in their life.
It's a tumultuous time in your life, especially if you've made mistakes early on. And, boy, these kids sound like... I've actually heard, I read this in this book, Irresistible, that when you have a face-to-face conversation with a friend or an authority figure, that the body releases a bouquet of neurochemicals that help you find balance. So, the journey in comics with Bill Ayers, I did a bit of research on Bill.
Yeah, you're talking about the book.
Interesting character.
Yeah, he's a fascinating guy.
How long ago was that?
Oh, it was about 8 years ago. I think we started writing the book because it was the lead up to the 2008 election. So that would be 8 years ago that we started.
That explains the Obama reference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, which probably, he had written a book for Teachers College Press, which is an academic press, about teaching. And they wanted to do a new edition, and he didn't want to do it. And he sort of, almost to get them to leave him alone, was like, well, why don't we do it as a comic book? And he thought that that would, you know, be the end of that. No one's going to want to do it as a comic book. And then they said, yeah, let's do it. And he was like, oh, what are we going to do now? And his brother was my English teacher in high school. And so they were just trying to get a list of artists together. And so I just got basically an audition for this book with the publisher just from knowing him. And I had some stuff published already at that point, so I had a little bit of a resume. And so I went through this whole process of, you know, getting hired to do this book. And then partially because we were going to have to work together so closely, and partially because I didn't have enough money to make the book and have an apartment, I went and lived at Bill's house with he and Bernadine, who he's married to. And so we had a really close collaborative period. It's like 4 months I was there in Chicago. And also that was lead up to the 2008 election, and Bill and Obama knew each other. And Bill also and Bernadine were in the Weather Underground in the 60s. So they, you know, blew up some buildings.
Controversial group, right?
Yep. So they did some stuff back then to protest the Vietnam War.
Right.
And it became kind of a news story because
yes.
The idea was that because Bill had worked with Obama, that Obama was a terrorist or communist. And they said all sorts of things about who he was. And so it all seemed really silly, but I was living in the house at the time, and there were reporters on the door, and like some stuff happened, you know. And he was getting death threats all the time in his email and things like that.
I'll bet.
Yeah. So I was there for that. But anyway, the point is that we made this, I think, a very lovely book about progressive education, you know. And for me, I mean, what we talked about in the backfence thing is there was a weird irony to that because he was being called a terrorist on the news all the time. And for me, that was sort of that I was, you know, 26, I think, at the time. But that was when I finally got that sort of treatment I was talking about wanting as a teenager, where someone sort of allowed me to be difficult and it was a very healing period for me, where it was like I had parents and I had this support, like both in sort of like a childhood sort of a way, but also someone yeah. believed in my work enough to really like support me and work with me through this whole process. And that was how I quit my day job, you know, was doing that book.
Now, you do a lot of work with reproductive health professionals. Can you expand a bit more on that?
Yeah. So initially I did a piece on miscarriage for a site called The Nib. It's run by Matt Boers. He's the editor. He's a local guy. You should talk to him sometime. He's pretty great.
That is compelling work, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I read quite a few of these, and it's gut-wrenching. Truly gut-wrenching.
Yeah. So, yeah, I did. I had a
I think it takes comics to that next level.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, that's the goal, I guess. I had a few friends within the period of a month or something who confided in me that they had miscarriages. And it was the same conversation, that they didn't know how common it was until it happened to them, and that there wasn't really an outlet to talk. You can't take a day off work because you had a miscarriage, and you can't really tell your coworkers. And culturally, we're not good at grief and things like that. We don't want to deal with your hardships, really. And it's really easy to conceal. I mean, if you have a later term miscarriage, it's more obvious, but a lot of people haven't told anyone because they're, you know, 2.5 months pregnant, and then they have a miscarriage, and they're emotionally processing something, and it's very hidden. And so I just did an interview piece where it took 5 minutes to find 4 women who'd had miscarriages. I tried to get kind of a range of people and experiences, and it was just about that. It was about acknowledging this thing that happens. And also, I hadn't thought about this ahead of time, but when you publish comics online, it becomes a free resource for the public. That it's free to read, you can just have it, and you can send it to your, now, maybe you don't know what to say to your friend who had a miscarriage, but you can send them this comic that's essentially testimonials about people who've had miscarriages. And so once that came out, a clinical psychologist...
Like a documentary film, almost.
It is. I mean, that very specifically is a documentary, that thing I made. It's just 4 very straightforward interviews, and it's in comics form. And the idea there, too, is that maybe people would be quicker to read an illustrated presentation of those narratives than
Reminds
just a written one.
Reminds me a bit of Alison Bechdel, one of her graphic novels, because it's just so unexpected to see that in the comic book form.
Hmm. Yeah, I grew up, you know, my mom came out, she's a lesbian, when I was 6 or something, and so we always had Dykes to Watch Out For books in the house. And my mom read comics. She read Linda Barry comics and Matt Groening comics. Those were just things we had her in the house all the time. And so I think those are part of why I never thought of comics as being specific to certain subjects, that comics is just a medium. You can tell any story in comics, and that I've never really had a clear expectation about what the material should be. The moment when I was transcribing those interviews, I had to like stop, and I had like my head in my hands for a little while.
Oh, this is transcriptions.
Well, I interviewed them, and then I recorded it, so then I kind of went back through the interviews and typed out the important parts, and then, you know, because it's taking probably 3 hours of stuff and turning it into 10 minutes of stuff, so you have to kind of cherry-pick it and then edit it and edit it and edit it and edit it. But I remember in transcribing and re-listening to those interviews just having to stop because it was so hard, you know, but also feeling like I was doing important work. So after that came out, a clinical psychologist in L.A., Dr. Jessica Zucker, who is sort of has championed miscarriage as a thing we should talk about, she created the hashtag I Had a Miscarriage, and she wanted to work with me, and she'd done really great work. So we pitched a thing to BuzzFeed about postpartum depression. We did that, and then we did a bunch more articles about miscarriage, and we did one about birth planning. We've done one about getting pregnant after you've had a miscarriage. I think we've done two about that. And yeah, postpartum depression. So then recently we put together a collected edition of these comics we've done that have run on the web. So all the work is free on the web. You can just have it if you want it. But I just like printed books, just that aesthetic. And to me, like, it's even having done all the work and it's on the web is cool, but having it like as an art object, as a book, is like an accomplishment. Yes. So we're right now through her website, which is ihadamiscarriage.com, in the shop. Throughout the month of October, you can pre-order this book, and then we're only going to print as many as we sell. So if we sell 50, we're going to print 50, and if we sell 1,000, we're going to print 1,000, and that'll be it. They won't be available after that, because we're not really booksellers. We just made this thing. So that's what I'm presenting right now. And the book is called Acknowledge It, because it's sort of the idea of acknowledge that this happens and acknowledge these struggles and what people are really going through, and just pay attention to this. Because to me, reproductive health, everyone should know this stuff. It's crazy that that's where we all come
absolutely.
From, is we were born. So why doesn't everyone know about...
educate.
Yeah, about miscarriage, or about difficulties of pregnancy, or of birth problems, you know?
Education's never a bad thing, ever.
Sure.
I did not realize that you illustrated the cover for Unwrap My Heart.
Yep.
Alex Falcone, the comic. Wow. This is a big deal, this book. It was promoted by, just recently, by the Multnomah County Library.
Was it?
Yes.
Oh,
it was
great.
On the front page.
Oh, wow.
I have all the apps. I'm kind of an audiobook freak. I think it's an ebook. And then you did the Hulk.
The Hulk for the
Thinking
Portland Mercury.
Hulk, yes.
Wait, I want to tell you an anecdote about the Unwrap My Heart cover. Because, yeah, Alex Falcone contacted me. I think he just... I think I was on a show he was on. Because I've been long
He's
time...
He's a man about town.
Hmm?
He's a man about town.
Oh,
Alex.
sure, yeah. I'm longtime friends with
Earthquake
Amy Miller,
Hurricane.
Who is a Portland
Amy Miller,
comedian.
Yes, yes. She's left now, but
and,
big name.
We worked at a video store together in the year 2000. So we go way back. In Berkeley.
Blockbuster?
No, it was called Vidiots. It was a mom and pop video store.
Well, I think he does a podcast about movies, videos.
He does, yeah. But so I think she put me on one of her shows. I have to do a presentation where I show comics that kids have done, like young kids in my classes that are pretty funny. So I think he saw that, I think, was how he thought of me. But he just needed an illustration for his cover. So he wanted, like, these two hands kind of tenderly touching. One's a mummy and one's, like, a teenage girl. And so we went to the Taste Tickler, that sandwich and bento place. It's by the Lloyd Center. And we had to, like, I made him, like, pose with me, the hands. So I think the mummy is me and the girl is him, I'm pretty sure. But we had to do this, like, in a crowded sandwich place during their lunch rush. There's, like, a bunch of pictures. Because I was like, I want to know exactly how you want the hands posed, you know. So that was a tender
experience.
Did you get
some funny looks there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's 2017, so it wasn't too bad. So the Hulk one, I think it was just like draw a portrait of the Hulk looking thoughtful or something. I can't remember the direction, but and then I sent it to them, and then, you know, you get paid one time, and then they've run it like 30 times or something.
Here's one you did of Dan Savage.
Yeah, because he does Savage Love, which I'm a huge fan of. And for the Mercury, they just had me do author portraits, so I drew him. And I think I overthought that one a little bit. And that was one person I didn't get to meet. It was just based on a photo of him. But I remember being nervous about drawing him because I like him so much. And I asked, Sarah Merck knows him, and I asked her to give him the original of the portrait. And I was so, like, kind of, like, what did he say? And she was like, I think he didn't know what it was. Like, I just handed it to him, and he was like, what's this? Okay, you know, so.
Do you listen to his show? He's a funny guy.
I listen to it every week for years. I don't keep up with it as much. I kind of go through phases with podcasts, but I was.
Me too. I've actually graduated to audiobooks. I've thrown together an audiobook club, actually.
Oh, cool.
I'm going through 2-3 books a week.
Really?
I mean, it's insane.
What are you doing when you listen to them?
I am productive.
Do you ever, like, tune it out, though? Do you ever realize you haven't been listening for 10 minutes and you're not?
Yes.
Yeah. Because I listen to podcasts a lot, but it's when I'm working. And I would like to listen to, like, hardcore history or go, oh, I should be learning while I'm working. But I've realized that I'm focused for periods and I'll miss 10 minutes. So Savage Love is good for that, because if you miss 2 calls, it's like whatever. Or I mean, I listen to a lot of like nerds talking about nerdy stuff and I don't care if I miss 10 minutes, you know. But I give myself a hard time sometimes for not having a more highbrow podcast intake.
Somebody told me that you have a podcast.
I do. Well, I work with 3 other podcasters. One of them is Carolyn Main, who's a local cartoonist. I met her, I think, through comics. We've known each other a long time. She's really funny. And then we have these 2 guys in Minnesota, Austin Gorton and David Bitzenhofer. They were sort of our partners. We did a podcast where we talked about every episode of Saved by the Bell. It was called Saved by the Bell Reviewed.
And then, was this on your Tumblr? I think I saw this.
It probably has been
Tumblr.
On there,
yes,
yeah.
Yes,
and
it
then
is.
We finished it. We ran out of episodes. And we like the idea of doing very special episodes of TV shows. So, and also doing it more as an anthology. Like, all 4 of us did every episode of Saved by the Bell together. And now it's more, we have more guest stars. And sometimes 2 of us will be on the show with a guest or all 4 of us. It's more flexible than it used to be. But we pick special episodes of shows. Like, the one I'm doing right now is the episode of Mr. Belvedere where Wesley gets molested, which isn't funny.
That is going back a bit.
Yeah, it's older. I mean, we're all like 80s and 90s kids, so I think a lot of the shows we do are from that era. I mean, we did older stuff, too. Like, I was a Nick at Night kid, so I liked older shows. Like, we did the episode of Maude where she had an abortion. I'm trying to think what else. And then it's more of a chance to talk about shows we like. Like, I keep meaning to do the episode of Taxi, where Elaine Nardo goes to therapy. I love Taxi. That was a formative show for me.
Yes.
So when I was in high school in the 90s, I was watching Taxi.
Danny DeVito.
Yep. Christopher Lloyd. Mary Lou Henner.
Oh, yeah.
And Andy Kaufman. Everyone on that show.
Yeah, it was an incredible show. Boy, I'm glad you reminded me of Taxi.
Oh, yeah. It's a great one. It's one of the better ensemble casts ever, I would say, on a show.
Ryan, this was a lot of fun. I wasn't sure what to expect. You're a great guy.
Thank you.
Yeah,
well,
that was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me here. It's always an honor. And like I said, you work alone in your room for 1,000 hours. And then for every 1,000 hours of work you do, you get to go talk to a person who wants to talk to you about it for
exactly.
An hour. So
I know exactly how you feel. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you for listening to the Weekly Portland Podcast at pdxpodcast.com. My name is Gregory Day. We will see you next week. Please join me. Why?